Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here live in Westminster on College Green. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't been here since Election Day, since Friday the 13th of December, when it was revealed rather majestically that Boris Johnson had won an 80-seat majority against the Labour-loving lefties, the people who thought that Jeremy Corbyn was a great idea. He's on his way out. He'll be popping up later on in Prime Minister's questions. It is Budget Day this morning, of course, so we'll be finding out precisely what Rishi Sunak is planning to do. What we won't be doing is spreading any false rumours about the dog in Downing Street and how apparently he has a little trouble controlling himself and Carrie and Boris want to get rid of him. That's apparently complete and utter nonsense, so we're not going there at all anytime soon. Andrew Bridgen joins me first up amongst a host of great guests that we're going to have all the way through the day today, including Alex Phillips, former Brexit Party MEP from Brussels. She's going to be joining us for Prime Minister's questions. The big question is Budget Day going to be able to be in any way a proper Budget Day? Because we are, as you know, still in the midst of coronavirus mayhem. Nadine Dorries, who is in fact a health minister, has declared herself to be positive with the virus. She's self-isolating. I would guarantee you between now and 1 o'clock, there will be at least two or three other members of the government who are going to come out and say they're positive as well. So what are we going to do? 0344 499 1000. We want to hear from you, of course, because you are the voice of reason. The sun is shining on us. We are the great and the good. We are part of what is now a very thriving democracy. We've left the European Union and all is well with the world. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, normally speaking, you would expect Westminster and College Green to be bustling with people, people wandering in and out, people from the BBC, people from Sky News, people from other radio stations that we don't like to mention. But guess what? We are the only people who are live bringing you the news as it happens right here in Westminster, because nobody else has turned up. They've all decided to give it a swerve. You know why? Because they're frightened of catching coronavirus. It's very, very bizarre. But I'm very glad to say that Andrew Bridgen is here with us for the first time since we've returned to College Green. Andrew, very good morning to you. Welcome back to the Tent of Common Sense. It's great to be here, I have to say.
Yes, it's interesting you mention about the lack of media coverage this morning. I've noticed that this week Parliament's been a lot quieter generally. There's been a lot less visitors around the palace.
Yes.
I mean, normally it is, you know, a bit like an airport. You've got people from all over the world coming in all the time. I think people have decided they're going to give it a miss this week.
I spoke to some MPs last week. I was at a do that a lot of them were at, and they were all saying they were quite surprised that somebody inside of the House of Commons hadn't actually stopped the tours of people coming in and looking around, because that would be the first thing you would think would be sensible to do. Is that, has that been stopped now?
No, it hasn't. And, you know, I've heard a few of the hard-working security staff we have at the House of Commons. And obviously, they have to pat down every single visitor that comes through.
Yes.
They have to go through their bags and belongings. And they said, you know, we have no idea where these people come from. A lot of them will have just come from an airport somewhere. First thing they get to London, they see the Palace of Westminster. Oh, let's go and have a tour and have a walk around there. It is a risk, but that's the cost of an open democracy, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I mean, the news last night that came in surprised me, I suppose, as it did everybody else, but it's not entirely unexpected that a member of the government, a member of the cabinet, a health minister, Nadine Dorries, has somehow succumbed to coronavirus. Because I've been saying all week, and probably for the last week as well, that more than we think, many people are going to get this virus, and you just have to hope that most people who get it are not affected terribly badly and will recover in a couple of weeks.
Yes, that's what we've got to hope. And obviously by taking the measures of washing hands frequently and all the other the guidance, it's going to minimise the spread. But I suppose Parliament is in a unique position in that it's a building in London, which is visited, as we said, by the whole world every week. Thousands and thousands of visitors. And it's somewhere that you know that there are 650 representatives who will go back to every single part of the UK.
Yeah, and is it, do you think, something that will be considered after today, because of what happened in Nadine Dorries, that they might consider closing down Parliament?
I think that always has to be balanced. I mean, obviously, there is a risk that we could be the super spreaders. Mm. But, I mean, to be honest, I mean, I'm going to, when I get back to North West Leicestershire this weekend, I think people would understand if I said, look, I don't think having surgeries now and meeting lots of my constituents is necessarily going to be the best thing for them.
Well,
interest.
We're already all changing our behaviours. You know, I was about to shake hands with you when you turned up and you said you didn't want to shake hands with me, not because you think I'm a horrible individual, but because people are stopping to do it.
I'm glad you didn't take it personally.
No, of course. No, I think that's the trouble,
although, did you see Mark Rutte saying that in Holland we're not going to shake hands anymore?
Right.
And then he immediately shook hands on television with the guy next to him and then realised he'd done it straight away.
Well, this is the thing. And I mean,
it's habit, isn't it?
We had the head of the European Parliament yesterday going into the European Parliament to say that he was going to take himself away from the European Parliament after having spread whatever it was that he thought he had to everybody before he went home.
If they shut the European Parliament down, you know, what difference
would
that?
Anybody notice
and does it make any difference?
Well, exactly,
so, you know, exactly.
Right. But I mean, it is an interesting time to be a politician because we've got the budget day today, which normally speaking, for the especially for a sort of a debutante, if you like, in Rishi Sunak, who only found out that he was going to have to produce a budget about a month ago, or less actually, because Sajid Javid walked away. It feels weird that we're even thinking of doing a budget in the midst of all of this because it's all about forecasting. The Bank of England have cut their interest rates this morning. But, you know, I can't imagine how Rishi Sunak can actually even predict what's going to happen next week, never mind next year.
Well, I think you're going to have to pass the measures that need to be passed. I think that pretty much guarantees that Parliament will be sitting next week, whatever happens, because we'll need to have the budget debate and then vote them, the budget measures through. But clearly there's got to be a lot of flexibility in his forecasting because we don't know how this is going to play out. What we do know is probably the coronavirus epidemic is going to have a major effect on the world economy. Mm. And we're not going to be immune to that, are we? I think that when you actually look at the way we're coping with the epidemic, I mean, credit where credit's due. I think the government are doing a pretty good job.
I think the government are actually doing a great job.
We've got also, you know, put our hands up and say, look, the NHS are performing extremely well.
Yeah.
They're going to come under an awful lot of pressure, and you know, this is the testing time.
It really is. Interesting that there are two schools of thought at the moment. One school of thought from the more cautious and sort of what I would regard as sensible medics who are sort of saying, look, if as long as we continue with what we're doing, as long as we continue to keep our hands clean and we stop touching our faces and all of that, this will come and it will go. Others who are reporting in from Italy, particularly yesterday, saying, you know, Italy is in absolute turmoil. They can't cope. The hospitals are overflowing with people, some of whom can't even be treated because they're so old that they're just going to let them die. And it's a pretty bad scenario in Italy. But I can't quite make out whether we are going to become Italy, which some people say we will in 2 to 3 weeks, or whether we will do better than Italy.
Well, that's a terrible situation. When your healthcare system gets under such pressure as it is in Italy currently, where they're having to basically triage patients and say, we're not going to be treating you because you're too old or too vulnerable. That's a terrible situation, A, for the patients and the relatives, but also for the medics who have to make that decision, which is why we're trying to take measures in the UK to delay the onset of, which is pretty inevitable, it's going to spread far wider than it is now, but if we can delay that until for as long as possible, we get towards the end of spring, the beginning of summer, the NHS is under a lot less pressure and there's going to be much more treatment available for those who really need it.
And in the business,
and also what you have to remember about Italy is they've had a falling population for many years. They've not been having enough children, so they've got a very aged population. I think they've got the biggest proportion of over 65s in any country in Europe.
And also they've got a very different culture to us in as much as many of the elderly stay with their families and live in houses with other members of the population rather than being in sort of old people's homes.
And, and also you bear in mind that, you know, the continental way of greeting people, you offered my hand, your hand to me. I didn't take it.
Right.
We didn't kiss on both cheeks,
did we?
That's
true.
I mean, I would have thought that's a pretty good way of spreading the virus.
Yeah, I would imagine it is. Back to normal kind of political scenarios. Yesterday was quite a big day for the Tory government and Boris Johnson because it was the day that there was a bit of a rebellion for the first time since the new government's been in office since the beginning of the year. You were one of those who voted against the Huawei deal. Tell us why. Tell us what happened.
Well, I've had all the briefings from the security services and the government, and the government will say that they can manage the risk of Huawei. It'll be non-core, they'll keep it down to 35%. And the question the government couldn't answer. I said, well, you may tell me and persuade me you can manage the risk, but unless you can persuade our American allies, our Canadian allies, our Australian and New Zealand allies that you can manage the risk, which you haven't done, that means we don't get access to the Five Eyes security information, and therefore it doesn't matter whether you can manage the risk or not. There are other issues as well. Clearly, the Chinese government have put a lot of money into Huawei to really control this technology around the world, and they were in 4G. We'd be reliant on them for 5G unless we make a change now. But this isn't the end of the evolution of this technology, and we can't keep falling further and further behind, else we'd be totally reliant on the Chinese, who, at the end of the day, are potentially a hostile power whose interests are not aligned with those of the UK. I mean, they're fundamentally different. It's a communist dictatorship, effectively, and state control. I think, however cheaply the Chinese are offering us this technology, and bear in mind, one of the giveaways is they're offering 30 years interest-free credit on the kit.
Mm.
So
you would regard that as something slightly suspicious.
I think the alarm bells are ringing.
Well, exactly right. But are you disappointed that you didn't get a bigger number so that you could have actually derailed it?
Well, we've got
it. In a way, it was a bit of a protest vote, wasn't it?
There were 38, including the two tellers. There were 38 of us who rebelled, who said that, you know, we shouldn't have Huawei involved at all after 2022, and the government should take steps to do that. Now, what we did get out of the government yesterday was a commitment that there will be another debate and a bill on the 5G technology before the summer recess.
Yeah.
And I think if the government haven't taken steps to remove Huawei's technology from our 5G network, I think there'll be a far bigger rebellion before the summer, when maybe some of my 109 newly elected Conservative MPs might have found their feet a little more.
Well, perhaps they're just sort of, as you say, feeling their way through things at the moment. I've been interested.
There's never a wrong time to do the right thing, though, Mike.
Well, that's very true. And as you know, we like to do the right thing here at Talk Radio. One of the things that I have noticed from some of those in the new intake is that they've been talking to me about Conservative values with a small c, and they're quite keen, I believe, to kind of readjust the way the party's going, because you had that kind of David Cameron, George Osborne period where it all moved a little bit to the centre, it all became a bit Blairite, you couldn't really tell the difference.
The heir to Blair.
Yeah, you couldn't really tell the difference between David Cameron and Tony Blair. And I personally would like to see the Tory party going back to the party of low tax, the party of less interference in your private life, the party of less preaching about climate change and all of those things. Can we get there, do you think? Is that something this Parliament can do?
Oh, well, we can. It's all down to the 109 newly elected Conservative MPs, they hold the balance of power, don't they? When they find their feet and decide what sort of Conservative Party we want. But and I would remind parliamentary colleagues that we won the election as the Conservative Party. We weren't elected as the Conservative Party to bring in Labour's policies.
No, quite. And today I would like to see, and I don't know whether we will see from Rishi Sunak, some form of indicator, even if it's not an actual tax break or a tax cut, some kind of indicator that we're going to get something back as the voters, as the small business owners, as the workers of this country, as the people who make this country what it is, that we get something in return.
Absolutely. Well, the facts are, Mike, as you well know, that the tax burden overall in this country has never been higher since the Second World
War. Shocking.
The trend is, and this, let's face it, with an 80-vote majority in this Parliament's probably going to run for 4.5 years. And all the figures are that, you know, at the beginning of parliaments, governments tend to put taxes up to cut them before elections. The problem I think we have is You want economic growth. We desperately want economic growth. The higher you put taxes up, the you suppress economic growth. And taxes are already as high as they've been at any time since the Second World War. And obviously, the Prime Minister has made a number of very large spending commitments.
He certainly has, and spending is very much in the sort of the gift of this government, apparently. They've suddenly found $46 million, by the way, to find a cure for the coronavirus, to find some kind of antidote to it. They've also said they're going to spend £1 billion spreading 5G across the world and across this country, where there's parts of it you can't even get a phone signal, never mind 5G. So, you know, I wonder where all this money's coming from.
Indeed, but I must admit, in North West Cheshire, I live out in the sticks in the middle of my constituency at a small village called Swannington Calorton, and my broadband was upgraded last week, yes.
You must have done something right.
But not to sort of London levels, I'll assure
you. Well,
you
say that, but my broadband in London is the worst of all kinds, because apparently I was told by my supplier that they were no longer going to give me Wi-Fi because I'm not fibre connected. And until such time as I am fibre connected.
Mine went fibre connected last week.
Right.
Before that, when I was backing up my iPhone to the cloud, it said, you know, it gives you the time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So in my house in Leicestershire,
right,
it said 24 hours to back up my iPhone. Down in Westminster, it was 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I think there's still quite a gap.
One of the greatest places to do anything, if that's the kind of thing you're doing, is the underground, where the Wi-Fi is so powerful, you can literally do everything in about 2 minutes.
Do it while you're on the way to work.
So, Andrew, any surprises? Are you expecting anything surprising from Mr. Sunak today?
I think given the backdrop of the corona situation, I'd be surprised if there's any surprises. I think it's going to be steady as you go, and we'll have to have another budget later in the year when the dust has settled.
Okay. Andrew Bridgen, thank you very much indeed. Welcome
back
to the Tent of Common Sense. The sun is shining. All is good with the world. We will bring you live the budget as it happens from 12:30. We'll bring you Prime Minister's questions as it happens from 12 as well. We want to hear from you, though. 03444991000. Is it time to talk about the Tory party and getting the Tory party back to being the friend of the working man? Because it's the working man and woman that put them into power. And I think it's time for some payback, isn't it? This is Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We are back in Westminster. We are in the Tent of Common Sense, back in College Green for the first time since the election in December. I'll tell you what, it's great to be here. And we're the only people here covering this properly because Budget Day is upon us, and we will be covering all of that as of 12:30 this afternoon. After Prime Minister's questions, Rishi Sunak is going to get up for the first time as Chancellor of the Exchequer. We don't really know what he's going to say because everything is so far really overshadowed by the coronavirus problem, not least because Nadine Dorries, the health minister, has come out last night and said that she is also suffering from that particular virus. We're joined now, I'm delighted to say, by Saqib Balti, Conservative MP for Meriden, coming in, of course, in the last election. He's live with us in the Tent of Common Sense. Welcome to Talk Radio.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here on your first show here after the election. And actually, you know, we're on the day of the budget, the first one after the election and the first one after we've left the European Union.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's amazing, actually, because the amount of time that we spent here last year, the number of people that we had in the tent, the number of debates that were held, the amount of kind of, you know, frustration that we all felt. It's a brand new day now. I mean, it feels like we're in a different era, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And actually, I always say on December the 13th, I think you could feel a collective sense of relief across the country.
Yeah.
And this feeling that actually we're going to start moving forward.
Except, of course, in Putney and Islington, where they were a bit disappointed.
Well, I've always been there, taught to be magnanimous in victory, so I won't say too much.
No, of course. But I mean, it is interesting, isn't it? The Labour Party are so useless at the moment that they haven't even managed to give us anybody to talk to. They haven't managed to actually give any sort of pushback to Rishi Sunak and what he's about to say in his budget statement. They don't have a clue at the moment, do they?
Well, you know, the Labour Party's got some very serious questions to ask of themselves. I mean, on December the 12th, the British people went to the polls, and their answer was resounding and quite resolute. And, you know, today, actually, you know, the Rishi is going to deliver his first budget, and it should be very interesting to see and listen to. Obviously, Corona is happening, and it's all about the policy responses on there, but it's also about this idea of levelling up and the opportunity that the Prime Minister took to the doorstep and the people responded to. So today really for me is about Rishi delivering on the promises made to the British people and the trust that's been placed on us.
So what are you hoping to see from him? Are you hoping to see, obviously we're hearing an awful lot about maybe infrastructure projects being announced, a little bit of give and take maybe with the north of England where so many people now voted for the Tory party rather than the Labour party. I'm a little bit disappointed on the tax front, I have to say, because I keep expecting the Tories to go back to the kind of party of low tax, which they're not at the moment.
Well, look, in terms of what I'm expecting, first of all, and I'm sure we'll talk about Corona, so I won't focus on that
too much
at this stage. But in terms of the infrastructure spending, when we talk about levelling up, we're not just talking about building motorways and roads, etc. We're actually talking about building opportunities for communities to get closer together. So if you are a young person in the northeast or the northwest, and you're wanting, you're seeing a job that you want, actually it makes it easier for that. If you're a parent who's having to do long commutes, etc., making it easier to get to wherever your destination is means, spending that extra half an hour, 40 minutes with your kids because you get home quicker.
Yeah.
So these are real tangible benefits that will help people. And actually, you know what, if you're talking about what this budget will be, for me, I think this will be something that will stand out for decades to come.
Yeah, it's difficult for him though, isn't it? Because not only was it kind of thrust upon him with about a month to go, but it was also given to him at a time of great kind of uncertainty because the coronavirus has kind of made everything uncertain, and it's going to be very difficult, I would have thought, for him to predict economically where we're going to be a year from now, because business is really hurting. I was talking to somebody the other day who said that occupancy rates in hotels at the moment in London is down to about 30% because the tourism just isn't coming in.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, when it comes to Corona, it is unpredictable, but the Chancellor is, you're right, he was thrust into this scenario where now he's going to be looking at every different policy aspect of things. You know, it'll be interesting to see what scenarios have been looked at, etc. But there's three aspects for this. There's, how you deal with vulnerable people, how you, he said he will do everything and anything he can to support the NHS, and this is on top of the £34 billion that's already been contributed. This is about the NHS being robust enough to be dealing with the crisis itself. And then when it comes to businesses, and I've advised small business all my life, I was president of one of the largest chambers of commerce in the country, and actually, business people will be, and I have my constituents have been talking to me about, the worry about cash flow. And obviously you heard the decision this morning from the Bank of England around the cut in interest rates. I think that will be a very welcome measure because there will be people up and down the country who will be thinking about paying their mortgages, their loans, business owners talking about paying the staff and paying the suppliers. So people will be looking to us. And I fully anticipate that this budget will be the budget that can and the budget that does.
I mean, last week, Boris Johnson indicated that there would be assistance for people and individuals and companies as well, if they had to not work and if they had to maybe take time off from school. I mean, my own kids are in school down in Sussex. They've been told basically that there may well be an opportunity to shut the school down. And if they do that, they will then take the time back out of the summer holidays, which, of course, my kids are horrified by. But, I mean, there's all kinds of unknowns going on here.
Absolutely. And, the key thing here is that we are following scientific advice and scientific data. And actually, I was really impressed by the Prime Minister last week and actually the way he's dealt with this crisis and the way they've, been constantly on top of it. The Chancellor's obviously looking at every policy aspect, different scenarios, etc. And actually also the Health Secretary, who's been very calm. He's kept the public, in good communication. And we're relying on scientific data. We're relying on the Chief Medical Officer to help us make informed decisions so we are responsive in an appropriate way.
And there is an awful lot of uncertainty because nobody really knows who to believe, because on the one hand you get, say, the Six Nations games cancelled, but then Cheltenham goes ahead. You know, on the one hand you see people trying to bulk buy toilet paper and you wonder what on earth is going on. And then last night the news, and often it's the perception of what's going on that worries people more. Nadine Dorries, one of the health ministers of the government, has now tested positive for coronavirus, and you wonder whether there's going to be more of that, whether more members of the cabinet who have been in contact with her are going to be ill.
Well, I think we're still in the contain phase, and the key here is to stay calm. It is to follow the government advice, by the way. We talk about it's the common sense type of stuff. So washing your hands for 20 seconds. It sounds so obvious, but this is about making sure that we're not spreading the virus, etc. I mean, Nadine, I'm pleased to say, is on the mend. She was.
And in some ways, that might be a better message than anything, because if people who are high profile, and I was saying this to Joe Twyman earlier, if people who are high profile do get infected, but then they recover, that's actually a piece of good news in a way.
Well, look, the key thing, as I said, is we're in that contain phase, right? And you know, it is unpredictable, and the way we have to deal with it. And people are looking to the government, and I'm fully confident in the Chancellor, who will, you know, no doubt be delivering on that in the budget today.
And as far as your own personal kind of experience goes, you're a new MP.
Yeah.
How are you finding it all? I've spoken to a couple of your colleagues who have come down from the north of England.
Yeah.
Some of them were moaning about the expensive beer in London. Some of them were saying it's really quite a hard building to get to know, because it's so labyrinth-like and it's all new and it's a bit like going to a new school.
Yeah.
How are you finding it?
It was a bit like new school.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, you, the word Hogwarts comes to mind at the time. But it is such a privilege to be here. It is, you know, the chamber of chambers. You know, you are at the heart of democracy. And you realise actually what a great privilege it is for me to serve the people of Meriden. But I will say this actually, you know, across my colleagues, what we've seen with this massive majority, the red wall becoming the blue wall, etc., as the Prime Minister says, actually is the plethora of diversity and talent and the experiences. And I'm really excited about the party at the moment. I think we've got some great opportunities ahead of us.
Yes.
And, you know, when you have things like Corona coming, you know, you can draw on a whole array of experience to deal with these situations. And actually, that's what the people voted for.
Yeah. And as far as the kind of ongoing talks are concerned with the European Union, trade talks with the US of A, and all of that, I mean, is there a risk that that all gets put on hold at some point because of what we're dealing with here?
Well, I don't think that's the plan now, as far as I know. I mean, in terms of the European talks, I think the Chancellor was very clear on Sunday. The talks are ongoing, etc., and they've started on a good footing in a friendly, amicable way. Of course, they'll be tough. They will negotiate hard. We will negotiate hard as well. Having that majority it really, really helps in that regard, etc. And the US trade deal is actually really exciting. So the West Midlands, where I'm from, you know, we have a trade surplus with the United States. We have the automotive sector, we have lots of manufacturing, so there's some fantastic opportunities. So when we talk about levelling up, we've talked about infrastructure, but there's the free trade deals, etc. Actually, I think our best years are ahead of us.
Okay. Sakib, thank you very much indeed. Sakib Barty, the Conservative MP for Meriden, new MP, very full of the joys of spring, as indeed are we, because it is spring-like. It's actually, the sun is shining and it feels warm.
It is,
which is the first time I think I've said that this year. It's absolutely remarkable.
You've obviously brought it with you.
So obviously, absolutely right. We are here at Talk Radio. We are live on College Green. We are back where we belong, back where it all happened, back where we made our name last year. And we want to hear from you. 0344 499 1000 is the number, because quite frankly, there is no other place to be. Nobody else takes politics as seriously as we do. Nobody else looks at it in the way that we do, and nobody else informs you and asks you to join in the conversation as we do. So please do so. Don't forget, you can tweet us at Talk Radio. You can tweet us as well at IROMG. And if some of you are wondering and looking for the live feed on YouTube, it's not out there today because the planks that run the technological side of this business couldn't work out how to do it, I'm afraid. This is Talk Radio.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham, Talk Radio.
I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Baroness Susan Kramer. But Susan, a very good morning to you. Thank
good
you for joining us in the tent of common sense, which is a beautiful day to have it back here in Westminster for the first time this year. But just before we talk to you, let me introduce Rachel Maskell to the conversation, who I think is on the line. Rachel, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Now, this must have come as a bit of a shock to you last night.
Indeed. Well, when I learnt that Nadine Dorries had to tested positive for coronavirus, I did contact NHS 111 to seek advice as to what actions I should take, and the advice was clearly to self-isolate, and I'm following their advice. No one is exempt, and we all have got to play our part in this national effort. And that's exactly what I'm doing to make sure, whilst I'm asymptomatic, make sure that I am not at risk of spreading this virus to anybody else.
No, so you're feeling okay, in other words?
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely fine myself. So hopefully, you know, I wasn't able to pick up the virus, but you just don't know. And that's what this is all about, making sure we contain and delay the spread of the infection. And we've all got to follow the advice that has been very clearly given from Public Health England.
And you had a meeting with Nadine last Thursday. How long did you spend with her and how close did you get? I know that might sound like a ridiculously personal question, but, you know, we sort of need to know as much as we can at this point.
Of course. Well, we didn't shake hands. I don't think, you know, obviously I know Nadine, she's a colleague, and you know, I spent probably about half an hour talking through some of the issues facing my constituents that we're talking about, mental health in particular, as that is her brief. And I've got issues that I want to discuss about the state of mental health provision within York in my constituency. So obviously I was in the same environment as her, and therefore the advice has been that I self-isolate for 14 days. So as not to pass on or have a risk of passing on any infection should I have become infected, and there's no evidence of that to date.
Right. And was your advice to be tested as well or not?
No, not at all. Just to stay isolated at home, which I did immediately, and will remain in that situation for the until the 19th of March, I think it is.
Okay. And what does that mean exactly? Does it mean you don't go out at all? Does it mean that people have to bring you food? How does it work?
Yeah, I'm going to be staying at home over a week and a half. So I'm continuing to work with gadgets like Skype and laptops and phones. Of course, I can continue my work. We can put in electronic questions to ministers, write to ministers, represent constituents, move meetings onto telephone. So I'm continuing with my work. It's just that I'm physically not going to be present.
Sure. But I'm just interested in how this works. I've not actually spoken to anyone who has been in self-isolation. I wonder, you know, what you do from point, point A when you wake up in the morning to when you go to bed at night.
Yeah, well, I'm just confining myself to a room and carrying on work as I normally would. You know, obviously washing my hands regularly, as is the advice. And making sure that I stay self-contained. I've got no need to leave the premises and therefore won't be.
And is everyone else who was also at that meeting doing the same?
I don't know. A couple of members of staff were present, as there are at these meetings. I'm sure that they have sought their own advice as to how to proceed.
Okay. Rachel, thank you very much indeed. Rachel Maskell there, Shadow Employment Rights Secretary, MP for York Central, in self-isolation because she had a meeting with Nadine Dorries last week. But I'm with Baroness Susan Kramer here as well from the House of Lords. Susan, it's interesting, isn't it, talking to people who are doing this, because there are so many questions that I have about the way that things are being dealt with. Because there's a great deal of sort of what I would regard as inconsistency. And I think clearly Rachel's doing the right thing. But when I ask her if everybody else who was at the meeting is doing the same thing, you know, we don't know that.
Well, I think the ongoing advice, listen to the experts, listen to the experts, listen to the experts. And if you have a question and you think you've been seriously at risk, you know, dial 111.
Yes, obviously. But shouldn't we be doing more than that? Shouldn't we be saying to people who are at that meeting, you must call 911 or 111, or you must actually self-isolate?
Well, you can have very powerful recommendations. I'd be very surprised if the other people who've been at that meeting hadn't also made contact to get advice. But, you know, to try and track, we all go completely insane. And I do think it is really important that, as I say, you listen to the experts. We're in containment mode. We're probably almost certainly moving to delay. That's take the expert advice. That's the best that we can do. I mean, this virus is going to spread. We know that it's going to peak. And the important thing to do is to make sure that people who are vulnerable are genuinely protected.
Yes.
And also that we don't destroy our economy while we're at it. So,
right.
You know, it does need a good dose of common sense.
I'm not trying to become in any way hysterical. In fact, quite the reverse. I'm very much more concerned about telling the right people what they should be doing rather than telling everybody what they should be
doing. I'm sure you've got it exactly correct.
You know, I'm slightly concerned because of what happened in Italy. And I know it's impossible to predict what's going to happen next, but there are those who think that what happened in Italy happened because they didn't really contain it properly at the beginning, and it's now the sort of the genie's out of the bottle, as it were.
Well, I mean, one of the things is we have the examples of other countries that have been through this. So in a sense, you know, because we're farther down the chain, we've got the advantage of being able to look and say what worked there and what didn't. What more do we know about this disease? And I think almost with every day that passes, we learn more about it. So that's why I think we're driven constantly back to saying, listen to the experts. I mean, one of the things, we've got such a good structure with the NHS and Public Health England. One of the things I am concerned to make sure that we hear in the budget today is that money is going to public health at local authority level, because so much of that public health responsibility has been moved quite correctly to local authorities. But they should have known in December what their grant would be for the year, and they haven't yet had that number. Now, I mean, they both need to know what they've got to spend, and they need to be able to get their claws on the money, because it's going to be really important to get that coordination to happen.
Yes, I mean, I suppose the problem for the Treasury back in December was they didn't know who the Chancellor was going to be. They thought it was going to be Sajid Javid, and so did he, in fact, until relatively recently. You'll be delighted to know that you are what stands for the opposition here today, because the Labour Party haven't managed to get their organisation together enough to bring us somebody to talk about the budget. They offered us a pre-recorded interview at 8:30 this morning, which we turned down on the grounds that we don't like them. So you will be the voice of the opposition today for all of us.
When you have a crisis like coronavirus, I hope this is a time when we all try and pull together, quite frankly. You know, this really shouldn't be a party political spat. And I hope the government takes that view as well and really is listening, because there's a huge amount of expertise across the chamber and there's a huge amount of expertise down in the Lords.
Yes, and actually,
all of that needs to feed
through. I have to say, and I'm not a massive fan of administrations of any kind, really, but I think they've actually got the balance about right at the moment. The public health people, Mr. Chris Whitty, I think it is, has done a great job.
He's been remarkable.
He's been really calm. He's been very measured. Boris Johnson, I think, has been pretty good. I spoke to Jeremy Hunt the other day, who's chair of the Select Committee, the Health Select Committee, and it does seem as though we are kind of getting that balance right. But the trouble is, it doesn't take much, does it, for the populace of this country, some of the more idiotic people, to go out and suddenly bulk buy toilet paper and pasta and all of that kind of thing. I don't know what you do about that, really.
I mean, it's very hard, isn't it? I mean, I hope people just have got past that first shock and are going to start being sensible and not hoarding. I mean, that really is just something that nobody, quite frankly, needs. And, you know, and I hope there's... I did speak to one lady who was quite frantic to get some toilet paper, and she said someone had offered it to her at £10 a roll.
Goodness,
now, I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah.
That's anybody who's
certainly,
trying to take
I mean,
advantage
I can,
of this
I can
situation.
Certainly tell
we
plenty
need to
of,
stomp on
I can tell
quickly.
Plenty of people that in my part of London, which is relatively sort of south and east, there are plenty of... there's plenty of availability in all the shops that I've been to, so there's no reason to worry about that. But, I mean, we are entering this kind of slightly new phase, aren't we? Because having got Brexit done, as it were, and leaving the European Union on the 31st of January, it's all kind of been a bit forgotten in all of this.
I mean, we've left the European Union. We certainly haven't got Brexit done, so that sits there in the background. I mean, one of the things today is... You know, if we didn't have coronavirus, we'd probably be focused on the Office of Budget Responsibility and its growth forecast for the future. And I anticipate those numbers are going to be a shocker. But I suspect nobody will be looking at it. And they don't even have coronavirus probably. Almost certainly, they won't have had the opportunity to put coronavirus impact into those numbers yet. So there is a huge story there that is very unlikely to get much attention and get addressed. But, you know, a year from now, we'll be suddenly thinking, oh, my God, why didn't we think this through?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because looking at some of the news reports from Italy yesterday, I mean, Italy is in a really bad place and in a really bad way. And economically... not least worrying about what their health is like. Economically, Italy was pretty much of a basket case before this. Now that we're no longer in the European Union, I presume we have no responsibility for rescuing them.
Well, we never had responsibility for rescuing them. I mean, that because they're in the Eurozone and we're not. So we were never playing that role anyway.
But there would have been an opportunity, I dare say, for the EU to ask us for a contribution.
That might have been a possibility. All I'm saying is that, you know, this wasn't part of the membership sign up. So we weren't on the hook.
Well, lots of things weren't part of the membership sign up.
In any way at all. But, even the membership sign up as it changed, that was, the, you know, people shouldn't, if somebody's sitting there saying, oh, thank goodness, we now don't have to prop up Italy, we weren't going to be.
I'm not really saying, no, I'm not really saying that. So what I'm saying,
I just wanted a bit of clarity.
Slightly more ethereal point than that, really, is that, you know, there's no reason why we wouldn't help Italy just because we're not in the European Union, I suppose, is what I'm saying, because in the same way that we would help an African country that had a disaster, in the same way that we might help Haiti if they had a disaster,
I think there is something more inherent, which is, in a sense, over the European continent, because the way our economies are enmeshed, we really all sink or swim together in the end. You know, one can do slightly better than another or whatever else.
Yeah.
But the general trend of where we go is that we need a really healthy European Union that's in order to sustain the UK economy.
And it's not
that
particularly
is really
healthy
important
at the moment, and neither is any country, really, given what we've got to deal with.
Well, coronavirus is going to knock things. I mean, I'm glad to see the Bank of England today cut interest rates. That is a step. But we're going to need, and I hope we'll see it again in the budget, I've no reason to think we won't, some real help for small businesses, because they're going to have to survive this bump. I'm really concerned
about
people.
Maybe you could become the party of small business, because I can tell you something, as a small business owner, I've been absolutely and utterly bereft, but as far as the Tory party is concerned, because they have now put taxes up more than ever, and small businesses are paying more taxes than they ever have. And I would like to see a party actually championing small business.
Oh, well, you might like Lib Dem policy, because we have a very strong core of support for small businesses, because they are the future. But, I mean, even on things like business rates, you know, that business rate, we should have reformed the business rate system long ago. We've been trying to reform the business rate system. But regardless of that, I hope there's something on business rates that happens today that at least gives some breathing space into small businesses. I think that's probably the most important thing we can do. But the workers in the gig economy, you know, people who are self-employed, people who are on 0 hours contracts, they're going to need to be supported through this. I mean, you know, you have a few weeks of essentially no business. Very few people have the resilience to be able to take that without some really acute consequences. And so I think that's going to be a really important care. The other area I'm concerned about is social care. I mean, we have run social care down. It is absolutely, and we're short of staff. I mean, I forget what the numbers are that they've said, but it's well over 100,000 staff short. I think people have been trying to recruit to give themselves some resilience so that if staff get sick, there is some cover.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not an unskilled job. When you're working with frail and vulnerable people, you need to know what you're doing. You need to be properly trained. You can't just drag folk in.
The whole kind of methodology of social care seems to me to be wrong thought out, you know, in the sense that, you know, people, more and more people come to me and say, you know, it doesn't seem fair that I've got to sell a house in order to pay for the care that I should be getting just because I happen to have a house. Because if I don't have a house, I don't have anything to sell and I get the same care effectively. And there's something wrong with that system. And whether it is fixed by some kind of a contribution through taxes or some kind of contribution, you know, from your early days of working, which specifically goes to one thing, which then takes care of you. I think that's kind of what we have to be looking at, isn't it?
Well, I mean, we've looked at things in the past. As you know, there was a report some years ago, which the Dilmot report, which basically said, cap the amount you'll ever have to pay, and then you'll be able to get an insurance. You know, you can start paying when you're in your 20s at some small rate that would cover you for the bit that you might have to pay.
Right.
And so that makes it a workable system. And I think most people thought that there was a cross-party group, there was general consensus. It just never got implemented. That around that is some sort of mechanism. But then there's also the support for local government. I mean, local government has taken the absolute brunt of an awful lot. I mean, two groups have taken the brunt of cuts. One has been local government, and the other has been people on any kind of benefit or welfare. And so far as we can see at this moment in time, they're almost being abandoned in austerity. They'll get some sort of, you know, there's some increases to social care, but compared to the population that needs it, that's not significantly so, just barely keeps it at current levels. Again, a lot of people who are on benefits are part of that extremely vulnerable group. They're going to be sort of locked in austerity with just simply, at best, inflation increases. So we got some really serious problems. And in a strange way, I suppose you might say, coronavirus might highlight some of that. I mean, when you get something like this, it strikes at the weak points in the system.
Yeah.
And although makes them much more stark.
The system so far seems to be dealing with it reasonably well. One final question, Susan. I know we're short of time. Lib Dem leadership contest, what's going on with that? Because we've all been sort of a bit obsessed with the Labour Party trying to find a new leader. We've all forgotten that you guys are looking for one too. What's going on?
Well, I suppose you might say the biggest problem we have is all the people who potentially might run like each other, and they're all friends. So to the extent that there is any kind of discussion going on at this point in time, it's pretty low key, and it's kind of pals chatting with pals. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of ferocity.
No, okay. We shall watch this space. Baroness Susan Kramer, thank you very much indeed.
Talk Radio across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.